HPL is
back for more.
It's the 2019-2020 season preview.
Oh, what a moment!
On Caught Offside.
Oh, yes! Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gunling and J.J. Devaney. Part three of our three-part series getting all of you ready for the 2019-2020 Premier League season. What's up, brother?
I think you can fade that intro quicker. We've had the first note of dissent in the ranks.
I don't care.
A guy contacted us on Instagram. I'm not going to give his name away because I'm sure you'll crush him. Let's just say he's from Baston. Not pleased. Glad that the intro isn't staying longer than the previews. Said it was overproduced.
Overproduced?
Woke up to that this morning, yeah. Overproduced. It's not, though. It's literally you produced it.
But, like, it's no different than what our...
And it's Mike Brownshare from down the hall voicing it, and you going, EPL, blah, blah, blah.
But then he basically thinks that our regular intro is overproduced. It's not all that much different.
He said it's not authentic to our podcast.
What does that mean?
Don't think you made it with your own hands, given to you by our Lord. Like, this is literally your sweat.
You want to start over? Is this the best way to start?
No,
this one?
Sorry to begin but with I, such I, rancor.
I truly don't care. I don't know. All right, so this part three is basically all of your input. We've gone through. We got a lot submitted to our mailbag.
Didn't get to all of them. Not possible.
Yeah, I know. But we tried.
And a lot of them were crossovers with our 20 questions, which was released yesterday, which is brilliant. It's one of the great works of preview art.
So, yes, this is a mailbag. So you guys have submitted a lot of questions. I've gone through all of them. I've made some diligent notes here, and I'm very excited.
You've made them in the style of a grizzled Southern lawyer who would write on his document, then come in a white linen suit and proclaim, "This here evidence says that this man is innocent."
Well, I would have typed it, but you shared the Google Doc with me and did not give me access to be able to edit it, so I had no choice but to print it and write in the margins.
This thing, guys, is like the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Have you, lost your mind? It's just some writing.
Scribbling. The notations of a madman.
You are clearly
out to annoy you.
Of the mood of someone who's going on vacation later today. And for me, it's just a normal Wednesday, and it's bothering me.
Vacation for hard-working two jobs, JJ, is 2 days off. So don't give me that. Right.
So you're going back to work after this?
Yeah.
You're wearing a t-shirt. It looks like you just rolled out of bed.
I know.
Did you even shower?
No. I'm going on a plane and I'm spending time with you. Those are not shower necessities.
All right, here we go. It's mailbag time. We've got a lot of questions here. Then we'll give you our predictions at the end. Let's delay no longer. First question here, JJ, comes from Matthew Roberts, who writes to us, "What does Pulisic have to do for you to consider his season a success? What would he have to do for you to label his season as a failure?"
I'm just going to deal with the success side because the
failure... Good, because I was only going to deal with the failure side.
But the failure is obvious. The failure would be quite clear to me.
Yes.
The failure would be, unfortunately...
If he loses a spot with the first team.
If he comes in and doesn't play, doesn't start, or starts and is dropped and we don't see him again regularly,
right.
That would be failure.
Mm-hmm.
I think, on the success side, he firstly needs to establish himself in the Chelsea first team. Preseason doesn't matter. I believe he will start, but that doesn't mean it's guaranteed, written in stone. It's not a numbers game, but for his position, should he start, he would need to contribute massively in terms of creativity. So I'm thinking, what do I want to see from him? I want to see, incisive passes, dribbling, taking players on, and, I don't think he's an out-and-out finisher, so the assist side of his game is big. So I'm saying an excellent season would be 10 goals, 12 assists. I think that
would be
excellent.
I think Chelsea fans would probably sign up for that right now.
Sure. Now, I will admit there may be more of a goal-scoring burden that falls upon him when you look at the not-great options that they have up front, but we shall see.
Yeah. I pretty much agree with all of that. So we'll move on to the next one, JJ. This is from Corey Smith, who says, "How do y'all watch the game? Y'all gave me a team last year, but sometimes I just don't see the plan/strategies teams lay out. I can't see if a player's out of position. Any thoughts on how to break this barrier?"
Yeah, I mean, Corey is late to the game, but he's a really nice guy, and he asks intelligent questions on Twitter, and I think he should continue doing that. I just think you need to watch lots of football and take note of the trends or patterns you see. If it doesn't make sense, like, for example, if the fullback is bombing forward on one side and he's not doing it on the other, like, if that doesn't make sense to you, like, you know, write it down, think about it, and then, honestly, as a good grounding to begin with, Jonathan Wilson's inverting the pyramid, and Michael Cox's new one, which is called The Mixer, The Story of Premier League Tactics from Route 1 to False 9. That's essential reading. Like, I can't wait. I think I know the game, and then I'm constantly confounded by people who write much better and think much more cogently about it. And I go and I read their stuff, and then I see, do I see that in a game? And I would say, from what the reviews I've read, Michael Cox's book, who writes for ESPN FC, is a great place to start.
Yeah, I think there are some things that when you're watching a game, you can see easier than others. Like, if a high press is being enacted, that's something that you can probably be able to point out. But you're right. Like, there's other elements of the game that are sometimes a little more nuanced, that are a little harder for everyone to see. I wouldn't get so down on yourself and feel like that you're falling behind. Look, I've watched in my life, I probably can't even calculate the number of NFL games I've seen. And yet there's still stuff that, like, when I hear a coach talk after a game about certain strategies or whatever, like somebody who missed a block on the offensive line, we don't see that the way that, like, people within the game do.
Now,
so don't feel bad about it.
Now, something I will do when I'm watching the football Giants, and it's something that I would encourage you to do with soccer people who you trust and aren't going to just look down their nose at you. I ask questions. Like, I ask, what does that mean? Or, you know, when they're lining up, how do you know for sure it's the shotgun? Or things like that. So I suggest that he finds an experienced football friend and ask him questions during a not intense or important game. Pick your battle now. Don't be in his ear in an important game.
Sadly, I know what it is to deal directly with someone who looks down his nose at your questions. Next question. JJ's nodding his head in disapproval, but he knows it to be true. All right.
Speaking of looking down the nose, this is timely.
Now, I went to town on this one.
Oh, boy.
This is from Andrew Kane. You would think we share a first name, and yet
he's bringing the smug.
He said, just wanted to make a comment on last year's preview podcast and poke some fun at A. Gunling, who mentioned that Ryan Fredericks likely wished he stayed at Fulham. He is still in the EPL and starting at right back. And that he did not understand the Fabianski signing, Hammer of the Year. Fair enough. Now, I will say this. I don't remember saying the bit about Ryan Fredericks, but if he is including it in here, I will say that I did. I have no recollection of it.
Yeah, but starting at West Ham. Can I just say, you go on the West Ham fan forums or talk to West Ham fans, they're okay about him,
but whatever. That's
he didn't have a
point.
Stunning season.
And I will say that Lucas Fabianski, not even going to try to fight you on it, I was wrong.
But
I was
how
wrong.
Could you have known?
But whatever, that's what predictions
bang
are.
Bang average keeper goes to club with record of employing bang average keepers who fail.
So I didn't want to do this because I feel like it's a sign of gross insecurity. However, I may as well just embrace what I am, and that is a grossly insecure person. So I actually went back, JJ, and I pulled up last year's preview podcast where I listed all of my answers to the 20
questions.
Are
you kidding me? That's obsessive, man. What is wrong?
If Andrew Kane had the time to go back and listen for my errors, I felt like I should probably go back and defend the things that I got right. My match of the season, JJ, I said Everton versus Bournemouth. They played and had 4 second-half goals against each other. There were 2 red cards in the game. It was a thrilling 2-2 draw. Was I worried about Manchester City? I said absolutely not. And sure enough, they went on and scored 1,000 points and won the league. Manager on the hottest seat. Not only did I say Jose Mourinho was the manager on the hottest seat, but I almost called to the day when it was that he was going to get
fired.
In
fairness, everyone gave you props for that. You were on the money there.
Well, Andrew Kane didn't. Let's see. We continue. Player that I'm most excited about. I went against my Tottenham sensibilities. I said Aubameyang. He won the Golden Boot. Chart that one up. A less heralded transfer that I was excited about. It seems like Andrew Kane is a West Ham fan, so he probably, I'm surprised, neglected to mention that I said Issa Diop, who was one of the best young center backs in all of England last season. Left that part out, didn't you there, Hammer? Let's see. First-year manager prime for the best season. I said Maurizio Sarri. Finished third in the league, won the Europa League, runner-up in the League Cup. Club outside of the top six most likely to break through. I said Everton, which in the ESPN Luck Index did finish sixth, ahead of Manchester United. It goes on and on and on. But thank you for your email.
Isn't it amazing how he remembered those two highly specific mistakes, but neglects to mention anything that you've got right? Like,
I also got two of my three correct for relegation, and I got three of my four correct in order for top four.
By the way, if you've got all those wrong, that doesn't make you adult either.
Of course not. Predictions are ridiculous.
Yes.
Look, we talk a lot, and we're going to say a lot of things, and a lot of them are going to be wrong. That's just the nature of, like, all of your words on an hour-and-a-half-long podcast every week being recorded.
Also, I think it's the nature of accessibility now. The back in the day, if Jimmy the Greek got something wrong, Jimmy the Greek, to impact Jimmy the Greek's life, say week one he gets something wrong. I think this is my lock of the week, and it's a blowout. He says Denver are going to win. They don't. They get hammered by Dallas or whoever the hell.
Yeah.
Right. to get impact Jimmy the Greek, you have to know him, know his house phone number. Jimmy's going to have to be at home, or you have to write him a letter. Now you can contact someone straight away with a hashtag and laud it over them.
And look, I love that Andrew Kane listens.
I think it's
great enough that he would even remember those things. But in a matter of fairness, I did want to defend myself.
Well, I'm glad you did, because you got a lot right. In fairness.
Let's see. Should
the next two questions, are basically, they lead us into telling people you got to listen to our 20 questions podcast.
That's fine. However, I do have answers to them that are slightly different.
Okay, so Dalton Lloyd asked, just wondering, what has you two the most excited for this upcoming season? And who do you think is going to be the surprise team this year?
So I'll use some of that what you just did there. I'll use some of that as a tease to say we literally asked this question of what has us most excited coming into the season. Now my answer was kind of tongue in cheek. I said VAR.
It was a great answer.
Yeah, and it led us. That was at the end of the podcast. So if people didn't get to the end, I suggest you listen to it, because we had a very surprise guest join us for that question.
Creepy.
That I think you'd want to hear. But VAR is coming, and that was what I talked about. But in terms of surprise, this kind of feeds into the next question, but I'll say Southampton as being somewhat of my surprise, because I think they'll improve.
Will I read?
And also what I'm most excited about, I referenced it a little bit yesterday also, but I really do think there will be a little bit more parity in the league this season. I feel like this idea of a ironclad top six, I feel like there's a chance that there's going to be a lot more blurriness there. In the end, it may still wind up being that the clubs we think of the top six finish as the top six, but I don't believe that it will be a runaway like it has been in the recent past. So I think that could be a little more fun to see, you know, Leicester mixing it up with like United and whatever and Everton. So, yeah, I would say that. And then the next question from Hamilton Tyler.
Mm.
He says, will Southampton run the table and finish in the top 10? I think we have a chance to bust through the lower half of the pack this season. Is Ralf Hasenhüttl for real? Would love to hear your thoughts on either of the above questions. Thanks. So I did go a little bit in depth on Southampton.
Okay, go ahead.
On the 20 questions yesterday.
Yes, you did.
One name that I did not mention yesterday that I wanted to mention today was the addition of Che Adams. Because Southampton, for whatever good they've been in recent years, one thing that we haven't really thought of them over the past couple of years is a team that's good in attack. I think Adams...
I don't think that's true. I think his goal scoring is like literally...
All right, so nitpick. Adams, Ings, and Redmond, I think, could lead to a more fun attacking team from Southampton than what we've seen recently.
Okay.
And which would mean more goals, JJ, yes.
Sorry to jump on you. I didn't... Because they did... I noticed, like, he asked his Hasenhüttl for real... When Liverpool played, the way their midfield was able to disrupt ours at St. Mary's in that tense game that we managed to win, they were very, very good, and it was impressive. And I do think he's for real, but I hope there is the patience to let him kind of rebuild and do, I guess this will be Southampton 3.1 or 3.2 at this point.
Next one?
Yes.
Let's see. This is for you, so I'll hand this to you.
What are your thoughts on Liverpool not making a lot of signings over the summer? I was of the opinion that we needed to add at least another midfielder. Also, would love to get your thoughts on Adrian coming in to be second choice keeper. I'll deal with the latter part first. Adrian coming in makes sense. Mignolet went. They needed a quick replacement.
He's a great signing.
And who's, I think he's a very good goalkeeper. And he will come in and he's experienced enough that when Kevin Kelleher, who was third choice, comes back from injury, you would think that they'll be a good training trio to work together and develop Kelleher. Because I do think long term, Kelleher they want as number two, although with Alisson's age profile, Kelleher may have to move on. But I think it's a solid signing for me. And I liked Adrian. I thought we were talking about Fabianski. On the list of West Ham goalkeepers, Randolph, Fabianski, Adrian. Out of those three, I thought Adrian and Randolph were not given enough time and Joe Hart was a disaster. So yeah, I do like him. What are my thoughts on the signings? Liverpool were explicit at the start of the summer. There would be nothing big coming in. It's a balancing act between keeping what we have and also, you know, improving the squad in small ways, but not overpaying for players that aren't going to play. Like, I had this argument on Twitter this morning. Somebody was tweeting about, why aren't Liverpool all over Coutinho? Coutinho will fundamentally change that team. That front three. He has to play every game for the wages and transfer fee you will pay to get him back at the club. Mm-hmm. Look at that midfield. The midfield is built on ball winning and high pressing, high energy, and getting the ball to that front three. He's not getting into that midfield without unbalancing it, because he won't do the work that Henderson, Wijnaldum, Fabinho will do. And he doesn't really play in those positions anyway. And who are you unseating in that front three? You're not.
Well, nobody. Certainly nobody.
So you're not changing it. Now, do I wish that we had upgraded at left back? Because the only way that Robertson and Trent Alexander-Arnold, we've been lucky with injuries. But you saw what happened when Gomez got injured. We had Matip to cover and we were okay last season. But in those full-back positions, you're asking a 34-year-old James Milner to fill in. Mm-hmm. That's not ideal. I still think that if you look at the contributions of Daniel Sturridge last season, we needed a backup striker. We re-signed Origi. Am I happy with that? Not really. Is Shaqiri someone who can come in and do a job? Yeah, but he's not an out-and-out goal scorer. So, did I want signings? Yes. Did I expect them? Absolutely not.
Well, do have Oxlade-Chamberlain coming in.
Yeah, which is like a new signing, people are saying. But I will tell you this. After an ACL, there's those niggly year of injuries. Expect that from him. Keita could be like a new signing too as well. But again, we don't know what we're going to get from him. I would have liked to have seen a few upgrades. I didn't expect it though.
Yeah, fair enough. Let's see, next question here from Lewis Keefe. He writes, name your young EPL starting 11, perhaps players 24 years and younger. I really enjoyed this one.
I enjoyed this too. Do you want to go first or shall I?
Well, should we go maybe position by position? Because we probably have a lot of
what
overlap.
What formation
are you
playing?
I played a 4-3-3. Now,
okay, you do yours first. I'll do mine second. I guarantee we have very little overlap because mine is...
You are operating on a different level, yada, yada, yada. My goalkeeper, I went with Kepa, partially because I had just had a hard time finding a lot of goalkeepers that were 24 and younger, and he fit the bill. My right back, Trent Alexander-Arnold. My left back, I went with Ben Chilwell. My center halves, I went with Nathan Ake and Issa Diop.
Interesting.
Midfield, I had a really hard time with my midfield. I went with Bernardo Silva, James Maddison, and I felt like I needed one more defensive-minded midfielder, so I did go with Wilfred Ndidi. But man, I had a couple that I left on the bench that I really was struggling over not putting in there. And then in my attack, I went with Raheem Sterling, Marcus Rashford, and for the time being, Leroy Sané.
Sterling still under 24?
Is he not?
Oh, no. Well, maybe he is, actually.
I guess in my mind that he's just like a perpetually
forever
20.
Young. I want to be forever young.
Let me look it up now. Now
EPL youth play.
Yeah, he's 24.
Okay. That works.
He will be 25 this season, but he's 24.
All right.
Wow, so wait. Does that mean that you don't have Sterling in your team?
He's not on my team.
You don't, then you're... moving on then. JJ didn't take the question seriously.
No, I love my team.
He might be the best player in the league, but he's not good enough to make JJ's young player 11.
I love my team.
Sorry, Lewis.
Do you want to hear it? So it's I'm playing a 4-4-1-1. Which can switch to a diamond if it needs to be. In goal, you'll hate this choice. Mark Travers of Bournemouth, who was the architect of, on May 4th, wasn't it, of that amazing Bournemouth win over Spurs. That was his debut. Unbelievable
performance. So that was it. He's now...
Well, first of all, it's to troll you. Second of all, he's an Irish international. Third of all, he's to be re-signed. They are really excited about him at Bournemouth. And
so am I.
All right, fine. Jeez. Just thinking outside of the box. Not allowed. Wan-Bissaka, right back. Joe Gomez, centre back. Nathan Ake, the other centre back. And Ben Chilwell. My midfield, Trent Alexander-Arnold on the right.
Wait.
Yeah. Midfield.
But he's a fullback.
Well, I'm playing him in midfield.
So you're shoehorning guys in.
Not, check the, he could comfortably play right-sided midfield.
I don't care what he could do. We're talking about what he does do.
Only what he does. All right, okay. Well, Phil Foden's in my midfield.
Right, well, that,
Phil Foden hardly ever plays. So he's nixed. Get rid of him. Jeez. Creativity, Andrew. That's what I'm bringing to this thing. Phil Foden in midfield alongside Guendouzi of the Arsenal. And on the left-hand side, Harry Wilson, now of Bournemouth, yeah, which I think is a good bit of business. And then the 1-1, David Brooks of Bournemouth also playing in behind Troy Parrott. He of the excellent preseason at Spurs. And don't deny it, Spurs Twitter is ablaze with him. They love him.
I think...
And I like him.
I think my team might do a Germany-Brazil should these teams actually meet on the field of
but
battle.
My team will be the one that people say, but ah, development.
You didn't... Marcus Rashford is still only 21 years old.
I know, but it's I crazy. Mentioned him yesterday. I can't keep... I feel like I'm putting...
I can't even imagine how badly that team would lose. It's... frightening. But you're smart. You proved how smart you are, though, which that was the goal. It's not to win. It's not to put the best team out there. It's to prove intelligence. Mission accomplished.
Wow.
Next question, JJ, from Paul Rizdahl.
No. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Excuse me. I'm getting so arrogant now that I am denying what's written on paper.
He says, do you think Newcastle getting relegated would improve the odds of Mike Ashley selling or hurt them?
Well, it hasn't hurt in the past, and he's relegated this team twice in the decade or longer that he has owned the side.
I would say the longer they stay up, the more they kind of just like go back to being the Premier League mainstay that they are, the more that their value increases.
Just
therefore
remember.
Therefore making me believe that it increases the likelihood that he would sell. So I think for them, look, I don't know. If he hasn't sold yet, I don't know if it's going to happen. But I would say the best thing for those who want him out would be for the club to remain in the league. Because I think once their valuation gets high enough, he might be too tempted to sell.
He makes too much money out of this club and has returned to the Premier League promptly the last few times. He will hang on to the grim end because the way he runs his businesses, it's about profit and Newcastle is profitable for him, at least. Randy Eshelman, he had a question, but our pod part two answered it, so he went with another one, which I'm going to have to explain.
Sad, because I did answer his original one.
Well, we're not doing it, so we've moved on. If Marmite were a shirt sponsor, which Premier League team would they sponsor? So Marmite is a spread that you put on toast and bagels and bread and things, and it's UK. It's a big thing in the UK. Okay. And it's come into the common parlance as a word for you either love it or you hate it.
So then let me speak to my Jewish brothers and sisters for a moment and say
Shalom.
That this feels like something that we might consider gefilte fish to be. I absolutely adore gefilte fish. I bathe in it. But people who see me do that are horrified by the sight of it.
Marmite is a British food spread made from yeast extract, a byproduct of beer brewing.
I've never had it.
So Marmite was not the first choice in this product.
So you're
it was a byproduct, and some dude in a brewery saw the goo and put it on his bread and thought, that's not bad. Waste not, want not.
So he's saying for us to identify a club that you either love or hate, there is no in-between?
There is no in-between. You love or loathe them.
Well, I would say that applies certainly any... There's a lot of teams that applies to.
But you can
I don't know anyone that's neutral on Man City.
You can have
on Man United.
Not any longer.
On Chelsea.
Man City would have been a team in the past where people had sneaking admiration for them, but no longer.
I think Pulisic going to Chelsea will change the dynamic of them a little bit here in the United States.
They have a big following anyway here. So.
I know, but I think him being there, they're, like if you're not a fan of one of the, like if you're an Everton fan, you know, so I'm a Tottenham fan. I hate Chelsea, and I just always will. But like, if you're a fan of a club outside of London that doesn't already view them as a rival, you may not have liked them before because they're Chelsea. But now that Pulisic's there, like an American Everton fan, they may not care.
They're universally hated.
I'm trying to give you the American perspective.
I know, but they're universally hated.
All right. The next question here, so it's a picture. I couldn't quite see what was going on.
Oh, no, that's a different, the picture is something else. That was from a previous interaction. It's the 10:55 a.m.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so just read from there. This is actually...
This is from Peter Kitty.
Yeah, two great questions.
Love the pod, he writes. Hopefully not too late for the EPL preview mailbag. No, you got in just in time.
Did it on the gram, by the way, as well. Caught offside ESPN.
Two questions, he says. Is there any other center back in the league that can rival Virgil's previous season? We'll answer that one first. I said no, but if I'm giving my like next tier beneath him, I do think Aymeric Laporte is very good. I think Jan Vertonghen is coming off a run of a couple of his best seasons for Spurs. And I really like Michael Keane.
Seems to be getting better and better. I crush him regularly.
But no, I would say right now there is... I mean, when we're looking at the season that Virgil van Dijk just had for Liverpool, it's not being compared to other guys currently in the league. It's being compared to all time, like Nemanja Vidic season or...
Paul McGrath in 93 for Villa.
He is operating in a league unto itself.
Just the way he plays as well. I mean, he was dribbled past for the first time in about 18 months in the Community Shield at the weekend. And there was one moment where someone zipped by him and I thought, oh, and his just Rolls Royce recovery speed, gets in front, wins the tackle and then plays out a pass. And he's like, I'm not concerned by what just happened.
Stud.
He's so calm.
And then the second question here from Peter Kitty is, would either of you be able to rock a Chelsea Pulisic jersey? I'm an American Arsenal fan, and I don't think I could, and I could not either.
No, Peter.
Not at all. If you want to wear a Pulisic jersey, just get an American one.
Yeah. Or do what we do, and we have a Borussia Dortmund Pulisic jersey from the 17-18 season, which we're going to give away at some point when we come up with how we're going to do it.
Yep.
But it's lovely.
It's sitting here and it's just waiting to be worn
and
by
someone.
And you
know, I got it from the great guys at classicfootballshirts.co.uk. And you know what, Andrew?
What?
That is an acceptable jersey for club jersey for anyone because Dortmund don't divide public opinion like Chelsea do. You can comfortably wear that and be a fan of another team in Europe.
Yeah,
I think.
I would say that.
Apart from FC Hollywood.
And then let's see. I have a question here from Logan. Yeah. Hey, guys, love the pod. I've been listening since the World Cup group previews and haven't missed a pod since. That's very nice of you. I have two questions. I hope you can answer for me. The first one, what is your favorite new Premier League kit? We'll go with that one first.
I mean, Arsenal are back with Adidas.
Yeah.
Hey, I know you hate them, but those kits are absolute fire.
JJ, you can look at my Southern Lawyer notes here in the margins, and Arsenal home is the first name that I wrote down.
And Arsenal away is beautiful too, and they're basically throwbacks to the 89 to 92 season kits, which were just...
They're really nice.
They really are.
There's absolutely no denying it. My other one, I like Villa away.
I have a big crush on Kappa gear. And Kappa are Villa's new sponsor. And I think it looks smart. Can I give you one that's going to shock you?
Sure.
I'll give you one that won't shock you first. Liverpool's white away kit, which is a throwback to the European final in 77, is pretty nice. It's plain, but it's
right.
Nice.
I saw it. Yeah.
Okay. Man City away. The one with the...
The fading orange into like neon?
No. Okay. It's dark, and on the shoulder it's got yellow, black, hazard style... You know, like warning tape style insignia, which is the insignia of Factory Records, home of, became famous for...
Joy Division.
Yes! Yes! Tony Wilson's amazing record company based out of Manchester that owned the Hacienda nightclub. So when you go to the Hacienda, you can't anymore, but when you used to go in the 80s, it was the absolute happening place, you would see tape, warning tape. That was their style. That was their label.
Wow.
And City cleverly have done something that I don't hate, and they've put it on their jersey. And I'm like, that is just unbelievable. And when I saw the jersey, I was like, I love that little nod to the city. And so I went and started playing a load of old factory tunes, Happy Mondays, all that stuff.
Wow. I did include two that I don't like. Crystal Palace away. I think it's their away. It might be their alternate. It's black with like a red and blue kind of like fractured line down the middle of it, which I don't know.
A lot of people do like that one.
All right. Well, I'm not a lot of people.
And Norwich I like.
I like Norwich also. I thought that was nice. I don't like Chelsea home jersey. It's blue, but with a wild pattern throughout. And what the pattern is supposed to signify is the design of the shadow that comes through the roof of Stamford Bridge. So I understand what they're trying to do, but I just don't really love the way that it actually turned out on a shirt.
Hmm. I could talk about this for hours, actually. Jerseys
it's kind
are
of tough
a big
on,
thing.
On a podcast and not with the visuals behind us for people
We're
to
doing
see.
A good job.
And then the other question that Logan had was, I'm looking to go out to more soccer bars to watch Premier League games, but I'm having a hard time finding a good one near me. Do you know of any good ones in Brooklyn or Manhattan? This is an intensely local question, so for everyone not here in the New York area, I apologize, but I would tell him a couple good ones. I've always enjoyed Baker Street, although it's far more low-key. I don't know if you're looking for like a rowdy atmosphere. Football Factory is a very popular one. We've been to Jack Dempsey's, although we haven't been there for the Premier League. We've been there for USA games.
Which is good.
I can only assume that they're also good for the Premier League.
He's asking for Brooklyn, so I presume he lives in the Brooklyn area.
Well,
so
you
I
can would, certainly help with
I'd
that.
I'd say Black Horse in Park Slope. 15th and 16th and 5th Avenue, excellent one. Paddy's of Park Slope down the street on 13th Street, also on 5th Avenue. The Monroe, if you're a Liverpool fan, also on 5th Avenue. And if you wanted to go up into like Williamsburg or closer up that way, there's Banter is a good one, which hosts a lot of different fan bases. So those are good starters.
Cool. Let's see, this is from Dennis in Seattle. He said, what, if anything, do you know about Sheffield United? Have they any hope of avoiding the drop?
Well, what do we know about them? Every single player is of British or Irish nationality, which is totally unique.
It's an unbelievable throwback.
It is such a throwback, and I kind of love it. Chris Wilder, the manager, has taken them from League One to the Premier League in just 3 years, which is no mean feat. This is a manager who has honed a good style of play over nearly 1,000 games in lower league football jobs. They have Billy Sharp, a lower league Alan Shearer up front. 238 goals, Andrew, and counting. A record for English league football. But this is his first time in the Premier League. Oliver Norwood, a fine centre midfielder, and their cornerstone, David McGoldrick, a hard-working ally to Sharp up front. Most intriguing aspect of this season is the return of Premier League, what would you call him, itinerant Ravel Morrison, who has just been all over the place since he was on that youth team with Jesse Lingard and Paul Pogba, and he was the pick of the bunch. Incredible career. Yeah. Pockmarked with some legal difficulties, a move to Lazio, a move to West Ham, several returns to QPR that never worked out. You wonder what Wilder can get out of him. And I mean, you've been on the end of Ravel Morrison's genius. Since we've done this podcast, we raved about him when Sam Allardyce took West Ham to the lane in, was it 15-16? And Morrison scored, I mean, one of the best goals you
would
have.
Probably one of the moments of his career.
The one thing we remember anyway.
Yeah.
Now, do we know anything about how he's done? No, but friend of the pod, David Priest, is the goalkeeping coach at Ostersunds, and he talked about him, and he speaks very highly of him. So maybe Morrison can do something for them. They've made a few signings in the market. In fact, they've spent $40 million, which is more than they've done in the past 14 years of their existence.
Wow.
Can they stay up? Even with a good style of play and the hard work and the pressing that they do in key areas of the field, I don't know, man.
Well, we'll get to that in our predictions portion of the show. JJ, the next one here I'll defer to you on.
This is from the official Fraser York, who sent a message, DM'd us, replying to a story on Instagram. EPL back for more. Bring it back for part two. Hashtag, it's what the people want.
EPL back for more.
And I said, it's on its way.
First of all, how dare you say that? Because it's not.
Best news I've heard all week. Forget transfers. And then Fraser drops the absolute gold. The boys in my soccer club and I played the last one in the rooms before a game. We won it. That's Busselton City FC from the southwest of Australia. If you want to do a shout out, shout out to Busselton FC.
If they sell
Busselton City.
If they sell any merchandise, I need to have. I want to be a full kit.
What I need is Busselton's next game. I need video inside the locker room prior to the game of the hype music that is Andrew Gundling's EPL Back for More. Honestly, in your wildest dreams, when you sat down to write that piece of work, did you think that
I'm going to be huge in Australia?
Thousands, the other side of the planet, there would be a team. Yeah, like, think of it.
This is like the episode of Seinfeld where Jerry becomes a star in Japan for the super terrific happy hour, and he's like signing all these checks for residuals of like 8 cents each. Yeah. Like that, I feel like now I'll go to Australia and people are going to be screaming EPL Back for More on the streets.
Can you imagine though? Like, what's the greatest locker room scene in sports movie history? It's probably Any Given Sunday. Pacino delivering the, what is it, the Los Angeles Sharks?
Miami
Sharks, yeah. Right. That's probably the most famous scene. You think about...
Yeah, I mean, Herb Brooks and Miracle. Yeah, you got a bunch.
But when you get to the key moment of the Pacino speech where he goes, "We claw with our fingernails for every inch, because that's the difference between winning and losing, between living and dying." And then...
in the Busselton City FC locker room, EPL Back for More. Same result.
The 6 inches in front of your face. Now I can't do it for you. But no... this is what gets Busselton going.
EPL Back for More.
Quick note. There's a Gaelic football team that were playing in a county final back home in Ireland. And that speech went everywhere. It was being delivered in every locker room. And the manager forgot to bring the CD player or the sound system to play that speech prior to this county final game for his team. So he reversed his car up to the locker room doors, opened the trunk, and just blared it into the dressing room. That's how bad it got with Pacino and that speech.
I had no idea that it resonated across the Atlantic Ocean.
Not
like
for Busselton.
Let's see here. One more, JJ. We had a lot of questions that we were not able to get to, but we appreciate it sincerely.
They were awesome. And by the way, we have mailbags throughout the season.
Of
so
course.
You get your voice heard on this podcast, and we try to respond. Sometimes you're never happy with our answers, but that's part of it. Before you read this, because you need to read this one.
Okay.
Can I preface it? Don Dennis is a regular contributor to our Twitter. He's a great guy, right?
Uh-huh.
But he has a bee in his bonnet. The bee in his bonnet is Spurs and silverware. Just know that going in.
He's not alone.
Right. But it's not the first time he's tweeted on this in this ballpark area.
Yeah. Is it because he's a Spurs fan or is he trolling Spurs?
I don't think he's trolling. I just think he may be an Arsenal fan, okay. Or he just... I think one interaction before I had with him, he doesn't really get or rate that highly Poch as a manager and what he's done at Spurs. But that's just background. You need to know that.
Okay. Don Dennis writes, "Enjoy the pod and love hearing from Ian Dark. Poch has done wonders at Spurs with what he has, but in reaching the Champions League final and consistently being in the top four, has he raised the bar such that it is time for Spurs to win silverware in order for a season to be a success?"
Can I just quickly do my thing?
Of course.
Get over the idea that winning silverware is, like, there's no Spurs fan. No Spurs fan taking the Carabao Cup, taking the FA Cup. They really weren't in the running for the Premier League, so we can nix that. There's nobody taking those pots and a day out at Wembley over what Spurs did in the Champions League final and getting to their first Champions League final. There's just no one swapping that. We need to get our heads out of it. Oh, even if Spurs had gone out in the semi-final, that was a successful season compared to if they had won one of those baubles, trinkets of domestic football. That is all I'll say. I cede the floor to you.
Well, unfortunately, you took what I was going to say.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Is that, like, it's very hard for us to kind of define what it is that is a successful season when talking about Tottenham, because you're right. I just simply would not have traded a runner-up in the Champions League last season for anything short of winning the Premier League, which was just never going to be a realistic goal for them last season. So, yeah, I mean, you can look, a League Cup, I'll celebrate it, of course, if they win, but like a loss deep in the Champions League means more to me right now for Tottenham. Now, having said that, I mean, we are getting to a point here where I do so deeply wish for some sort of like hardware to validate all of what's gone on there.
Or to shut people up, really.
Well, yes,
it doesn't validate it.
But the shutting people up thing, I don't really care, because I've watched Tottenham every single game over the last however many seasons, and I know what I'm seeing has been fun, and I love this team. The shutting people up part doesn't mean as much to me. I just want it for me. Like, I think it would be great to finally see them do it. Now, I don't know. That's the funny thing is, like, so last year Tottenham, in their run through the League Cup, they faced Arsenal, Chelsea. Had they beaten Chelsea, they would have gone on to face City. So, like, that's one way where a League Cup could have meant a whole lot to them. If they lost to Chelsea in the semifinal, but, like, they beat Arsenal. Like, if they had gone through that run of teams to win that, all of a sudden that's a meaningful trophy. But, like, you know, I've seen Tottenham in the past face, like, Leeds into, you know, like, Stevenage or something. Like, so that to people, like, if they do that, and then let's say, like, Wolves make some run to a League Cup final, which would be good, but Tottenham should be beating a club like Wolves, and then Tottenham wins. Like, so if they win that trophy, that's what it will take to quiet people down? Like, all this other stuff that they've done is all, yeah, whatever, but tell us when you win. Okay, you just beat, like, a non-league side and a couple, like, championship-level teams and an okay Premier League team. Now you can finally celebrate. Like, I just don't get it.
One thing I hate about the expansion of the English club game is that we take things in, like, basically the last 5 years. We don't take things in the round. And I'll say this. Apart from an FA Cup under Terry Venables in 91, apart from a League Cup, which, look, I mean, Tottenham could win that even in their worst day. They could still win a League Cup. And apart from pretty much, I would call, an aberration under Harry Redknapp, where they'd spent a lot of money and he managed to get the team working together. Like, Spurs have been nowhere for the best part of how many years? Decades. You know, the growth I've seen in Spurs is just incredible.
Well, the problem is,
and you have to place it against the backdrop of where they were. They are now regular Premier League top four team. They were not that for the longest time. And they are now a team that is competing regularly in the Champions League and regularly getting out of their group. And once you get out of the group, anything can happen. That progress, I cannot tell you how big that is. Add in the new stadium. Add in everything else that's going on with this team.
The problem for them is that they are in some ways a victim of their own success, because there's a little bit of a Buffalo Bills thing going on here, where runner-up in the Champions League, runner-up in League Cups, FA Cup semifinals, you know, second place in a Chelsea title run-in, battling Leicester in their there's a little bit of, like, a runners-up mentality here. When are they going to break through? So
okay,
it's not lost on me as to why people say, when are they going to do it? When are they going to do it?
But I don't think a cup invalidates or validates what's gone on at the club.
I think it's an
easy
thing.
It's too narrow.
I think it's an easy thing for people who don't watch them to lean on. But when you do watch them, you see, I mean, you know how I feel about them.
Yeah.
That's it for the mailbag. We're going to take a really quick break. When we come back, we'll wrap up with our predictions. And then it's on to the start of the league, which is just awesome. We are so close. Don't go anywhere. Oh, back now on Caught Offside. It is one of probably our least favorite exercises of the year.
I don't know anyone really in football media who likes it.
I think it's one of these things that we all just do because it's like you feel like you're just supposed to.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
Prognosticating has always been a part of sports media, particularly in this country. Now, you should be buoyant. Buoyant!
Should I?
After last season's predictions, which were really good from you.
Well, here we go.
Let's do it.
So let's start with our predictions. This is the one that I hate the most, trying to predict the demise of teams that I
don't like it.
The bottom three, I went with Brighton, Sheffield United, and I had a really hard time with my third one, JJ. I think Norwich barely stay up, and I think Burnley go down.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
My bottom three is Crystal Palace.
Even if Zaha stays, wow.
Mm. Because if he's a want-away striker, classic tabloid, want-away striker, sulks. Crystal Palace, Brighton and Hove Albion, and Sheffield United.
So we agree on two of the three, but where we differ is Palace
so,
and Burnley.
I'm so bold in saying that Norwich are going to stay up.
We both have Norwich staying up.
Mm.
Fascinating. Truly, truly fascinating. Let's see. Manager of the season. So I have a feeling what you and I say here, well, actually, I don't want to speak for you. Mine will be a bit of a giveaway as to who I think is going to win the league.
Okay.
I'm going with Pep. Hmm. Oh, boy.
Well, you've kind of given everything away there, haven't you? It's great.
I'm going with Pep. I think if he is able to summon that sort of success for a third straight year, it warrants manager of the season.
I am going with a German manager.
Hasenhüttl.
Daniel Farke. Because if Norwich stay up, that is a work of alchemy. And therefore, he must be manager of the year. He won't get it, though. It'll probably be Pep or Klopp.
Yeah, it's tough for somebody to be awarded with that simply for staying
but
up.
But I can't give... I have to give my own one, so that's it.
Okay. Top scorer. You want to go first?
Mohamed Salah.
I went with the same team, different player.
Sadio Mane.
Sadio Mane.
A lot of miles on the clock this summer. And
yeah, I mean, I guess Salah almost as much.
I just see
same tournament didn't go as far, but we're talking of a difference of, what, a couple games?
Yeah. I mean, Salah's 9 shots at the weekend suggests he's in the form for...
It's a community shield. Let's not judge an entire season's worth of
work. No, I should be worried. He looked, if not technically sharp, physically sharp. So that was good.
All right, my player of the season. So I promise, I've done this now. This will be the third straight year. I promise if he doesn't do it this year, this will be the last time I do it.
Oh, I know who you're going for.
I went with, once again, Kevin De Bruyne. Okay. One of these years, he's going to do it. He's just too good.
Well, you need him to stay fit.
I know.
I went with the same team, Bernardo Silva.
Hmm, okay. That's
who I went with. But I mean,
they have, I would say, three serious candidates between those two and Raheem Sterling. I don't know. That was a tough one, player of the season. I feel like there's really a lot of guys in the league right now that I feel strongly about.
A lot of known unknowns, though. That's what I looked at. Guys that I know are good, but I do not know will perform because they're... like, for example, Arsenal. Pepe could have an unbelievable season, and Arsenal could be terrible. That is just a fact. Look at that Aubameyang last year.
Yeah. All right, here we go. Before we get to our top 4/champion, do you have a best of the rest?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Should we not do the first bit? Mine is seismic. So.
Oh. So you want to go with who our champion and top 4 is first?
Okay, let me do the best. I've done it like this. I mean, you can deduce what my top 4 is from my best of the rest.
All right.
So I've done the best the next three down. So that would be what?
Fifth, sixth, and seventh?
Yeah. You ready?
All right.
Manchester United in fifth. Sixth, Leicester City. Seventh, the Arsenal Football Club.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You are missing a name there that leads me to believe you have a shocker in fourth.
How's that?
Oh, actually, no.
No.
That's not necessarily true.
No.
Well, then you have a shocker not being in the top 7.
Outside the top 6. I can't do a whole preview show where I keep talking about the threat from below like it's friggin' Jaws.
So should we do top 4?
And not put them in. I have to put them in now. So it's Leicester that break in. So let's do top 4. Yeah.
All right. So my top 4, I'll go first here. Finishing 4th, I have Arsenal. Finishing 3rd, I have Spurs. 2nd, I have Liverpool. And champions again, I have Manchester City.
Well, I'll do it in... The champions will be Manchester City.
Wow.
Liverpool will finish 2nd. Much closer will be the gap between them and Spurs than last season. Spurs will be in 3rd. And Chelsea will be in 4th. Frank Lampard's Chelsea...
Wow.
London Blues, as they're known.
Will it really hurt you if Liverpool can't break through? Like, does it feel like this season should be the moment where they do it? Or
no,
is
okay. No, actually, no, it doesn't. It feels as if we're bound for a little bit of a dip. I mean, 97,
but not them. Like, to ask both of those teams to do what they did.
I still think that they are better equipped. But
the reason,
I mean, but like, Andrew, a bit of a dip for them. Okay, they'll dip a little bit, but I'm talking about maybe 6-7 points for Liverpool. I'm talking they finish under 90 points. And City could still lose X amount of points and still be in the 90s. Do you know what I mean? Do you know,
the thing for me with Manchester City,
if they dip we dip, then it's just equal.
When you dip, I dip, we dip.
Yeah.
The thing for me with Manchester City is injuries are such a concern for everybody in the Premier League, except them. It's just not for them.
Well, look, your player of the year, I mean, look at how he fell off.
He missed huge stretches of the season, and they still went on and tallied an insane number of points and won the league over one of the best teams we've seen in recent memory in Liverpool.
I know he's quite an honest guy, but when he was talking about, he was so honest when they were talking about their trip abroad. He just said, it's not about preseason, it's not even really about football. We do more commercial stuff. That's a guy who's very honest, and his honesty last season was his disappointment at his injury record. And he's going into this season with something to prove, which is good, but it's good for your prediction, but there's no guarantees with him,
like,
at all.
It's just amazing. You know, we talk about how important Fernandinho is to what Manchester City do, and you can start to see he's dealing with a few more injuries last season.
So they get Rodri.
He's 33 years old, and so they go out and they get the best possible guy to kind of, like, usher him off into the next phase of his career.
And, you know, they spent the big money that Jurgen Klopp wouldn't spend this summer, City went and spent it on one player. That's just it.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
So there you go. This has been a lot to take in. Hopefully you do. If you're listening now, then I give you just loads of praise for having made it through all three of our EPL previews.
Now,
that's awesome.
There's going to be someone who said, well, you didn't go in depth enough on X or Y. There's
yeah,
a whole season to get to these teams, by the way. And also, you have a mailbag where you can mold what you want.
Right. Somebody just sent us a whole question about Southampton, somebody about Sheffield United, and we answer those things. So we're not hiding.
No,
we're not. From anybody. This was a lot of fun. Three straight days of you and me sitting here in a what has become just such a smelly room.
And we've
something died in here and we can't find it. And
yeah.
I'm worried.
And we didn't stink it up.
No. We walked in here the other day and it smelled like somebody had, like, placed a fish somewhere, like, in the rafters that we just can't get to.
So, quick story. Paul Gascoigne pranked Gordon Jury when he was at Rangers with that. He got two fish and he hid one under the seat and one in the trunk of his Range Rover. Now, why did he put two in?
Because I can guess.
So if he found one, he would have thought that was it.
Right.
So he finds the fish after it's almost too late. The car is stunk up, but he thinks, okay. He drives around with, you know, those tree air fresheners? They're hanging from every part of the car. Ali McCoys tells the story best. And the other one in the trunk, he did not find until the car was literally destroyed with the smell and he had to sell it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Stinks. So Gaza has been in our studio.
Oh, geez. So what is, maybe that's what the drilling is. They're just, like, preemptively just dismantling it because we're going to need a new one because the stink is in the walls now.
I care hugely about smells.
Yeah, you walk around with spray deodorant. I'm not even joking.
No, I'm smell sensitive.
Yeah.
Because I believe there's a lot of first impressions you can get back. You cannot get back your stank. So make sure you don't have it. And on that note,
yeah, this was a lot of fun. Hey, enjoy, everybody. The season starts on Friday. It lasts all weekend long. We've been looking forward to this all summer. This should be great. It should be a really, really fun season. I think we'll have more parity this season. I think the league is loaded with superstar talent. Should be great storylines every week. If you've been with us before, we look forward to sharing another season with you. If you're just joining us from whatever you latched onto this summer, we hope you stick with us because the Premier League is one of our favorite things to do, and we do it fairly thoroughly.
Before you know it, it'll be a Monday pod for Premier League and a Wednesday pod for Champions League, and you'll be just zipping along.
Yep. Hey, this was a lot of fun, man. To you, I say,
take you later, fun boy.
See ya.
Smell you later.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.